Okay. So today is the 14th of June, 2019, and Tzemach's not here, so I'm not really sure what the Hebrew date is. But we...
11th of Sivan.
The 11th of Sivan you got. Are you looking at something?
No, I just
moved
earlier.
Okay, so today is the 11th of Sivan, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Naso, Elias and Chutzlaritz, Parshas Malos, Chaneret Yisrael. So we are up to Halacha Day of Perek Chaf Zion, where it details the laws of inheritance as they should be. And if one looks through the Torah, so what are the laws of inheritance? So you, whatever the a woman dies, doesn't really matter. Just it means the man keeps whatever dowry there was when the woman entered the marriage. If the man dies, so it gets divided up amongst his sons, with the oldest son getting a double portion. So if there's five sons, you divide it up six ways, and the oldest son gets two portions, everybody else gets four portions, right? So that's the laws of inheritance. If there are no sons, so as we learned in this parsha, it goes to the daughter. If there's no, if a son has already died, so his children, that son's children, will get that son's portion. Right, so if there's five children, five sons, two daughters, so it gets divided up six ways. Two of them go to the oldest child, the other four go to everybody else. The other daughters get nothing. If one of those sons, those four sons who died, has died already, so his portion gets divided amongst his children. If he died and he doesn't have children, so his stuff just doesn't exist. His stuff, instead, rather than dividing the father's stuff up six ways, you'll divide it up five ways and divide accordingly. Right? Sounds simple enough? Right? Okay. So how many here have wills or intend that their money will be divided up in that way amongst their children? Yeah. No. Probably not. Right? We wrote up a will a couple of years ago, Chav and I, and ours is not designed to be divided that way either. So the question is, well, first the question might be, why not? Torah says to do it that way. The other question is, is it effective to just write up a will and say, oh, we're going to do it differently than what the Torah said? So it could be effective, meaning it could just be divided up that way and life will go on. But technically, if a son will, one of those sons, the oldest son, for example, gets up and says, hey, wait a second, why am I getting the same as everybody else? I should be getting double everybody else. And he would take the case to Beis Din. Beis Din would decide in his favor, right? So, and technically everybody else should be under that jurisdiction as well. So that's what I'd like to discuss this morning, the way we do inheritance today, and how would one do it halachically? How would one do it in accordance with halacha? Okay? So first of all, yeah, just decide what's in and what's out. There is, by the way, if one wants, I found while looking around a little bit, there is a 50-page...
If the
wife is according to the Torah, is not an inheritor of her husband. The wife has to be taken care of with the assets of her husband. So the way, if you learn the Gemara, what happens is the stuff gets divided up amongst the children, and the children are responsible for taking care of mom until she gets remarried, in which case then she has a new husband who's going to take care of her. Now, if one is further interested, there's a 46-page or so English... I don't know what you call it. A guide, I guess, to some of these details put out by someone named Rabbi Ari Marburger. Ari Marburger is a growing person on the scene. I mean, I've been growing on the scene for 10 years now. He's very much on the scene of Jewish monetary issues. He's Rosh Kol in Lakewood, somebody that I have dealt with and, been in contact with about issues in the past. It's available online, pretty easy to Google and find out what's there. So first of all, what's in and what's out? What do we consider something that's inheritance or not? So just an interesting point that I came across, and that is, what is the issue with what he referred to here in the Piskei Choshen as a sug bituach? What is a sug bituach? It's life insurance. right? If somebody has a life insurance policy, so the life insurance policy is then for $500,000. He has five children. So does that get divided up according to halacha or not? Would an adult, would the oldest child get more, could get double of that? What about the daughters? Would they be entitled to it? So he actually suggests, first of all, he says the oldest child would not get double because there's a distinction in halacha between what is ro'i and what is muhsak. What does that mean? Muhsak means it's something that the father already has as opposed to something that is coming to the father. So when we say that the son, that the oldest son gets double, he only gets that which the father has already, only assets that which the father already has in his possession. If it's owed to the father, if it's money that's coming to him, that's not considered owned, that's considered ro'i to him. So it's only coming to him, it would not get divided up in that way. But furthermore, he then turns around and says, so first of all, it certainly wouldn't get divided in the way where the oldest son gets double. But beyond that, he doesn't think it would get divided at all, because the only thing that one divides as inheritance is something that was owed while the person was alive. When does life insurance become owed? Only after the person dies, right? In which case, it actually would not be subject to the law, the Torah laws of Yerusha at all, and would then be able to be divided up accordingly. Another thing that is discussed sort of as a preamble is that these are only things that is the father's assets. The mother's assets will just go to the father, right? So we're just talking the context of the father dying. This really is only things that are owned by the father. But let's say it is jointly owned by the father and the mother. Right now, we do have a concept that things that the mother get, that the woman, the wife, father, mother, that a wife gets, go belong to her husband. But that doesn't necessarily happen that way. I mean, that's the way it's discussed in the Torah, but that's not like an automatic. So things that are jointly owned, I mean, for example, if the husband is mochel on that, he says, no, it doesn't have to go to me. We can jointly own it. So that's okay. That works. So if they have a jointly owned home or a jointly owned bank account, right, that it's under both of their names. So that then is not subject to inheritance, right? So if the father dies and there's jointly owned things between them, which very often could be 95% of the father's stuff, right? So that will just simply go to the woman as opposed to it being subject to the laws of inheritance. Now, it doesn't solve the problem, right? If the father dies second, or what happens when the mother dies, I mean, it's still been subject to the regular laws of inheritance, but just while the woman is still alive, in a way, the issue isn't that big of an issue. But it should be resolved, and we'll discuss how to resolve it when the father is still alive. Okay, so what are ways of resolving these issues? Could we just say, well, listen, I can divide things up how I want. The Torah gives guidelines, but I'm also entitled to disinherit people. So do we permit that? Does the Torah permit disinheriting somebody? So there is a Mishnah in Maseches Bava Basra, the last couple of chapters of Maseches Bava Basra, most notably the 8th chapter, Yesh Nochem, deal with the laws of inheritance. So there's a Mishnah there that says, HaKosef es tachasov la'acherim, ve'niach es banav. Right, let's say somebody writes his estate over to other people. I'm going to give all my assets to Congregation Beth HaMedrash. My children have enough money. They don't need it. We're just going to give it over to, we'll divide it up, First Seder and Beth HaMedrash. Right? So can you do that? So v'niach es banav, and he leaves, so he leaves the children out. Masha asa asoi. Right, what he did is valid. Ela ein ruach hachamim noche imenu. But we're not happy with him. The chachamim don't appreciate that. They don't believe that is appropriate. Now, does that mean that it's usser? A little bit of a discussion whether that means that it's usser or not. But if one would write the kid out, so that would, that if explicitly, that would work. But it's not permissible, so it doesn't really resolve our issues. And the Gemara actually comments, however, Shimon Gamliel Omer, Im lo ayu banav noagim kashura, if his children did not act accordingly, zachar latov. So it actually was a good thing that he did. The Gemara then has a long discussion here, trying to figure out, do the Chachamim agree with Rav Shimon Gamliel or not? Right? Tana Kama said, you can't write someone out. Rav Shimon Gamliel comes along and says, if the kid is bad, then you could. So is he disagreeing, or is he just adding a caveat to the first part? So Gemara has a discussion. Ultimately, and based on story, so it's interesting, but it seemingly concludes that it would not be appropriate, that it's appropriate to even include kids that are not doing exactly a good thing, with the assumption that hopefully they'll improve by the fact that they're included. Brings a story that demonstrates that impact. But still, it's not working. In a normal case, so the Chacham don't appreciate somebody who redirects in that particular way. Someone to ask? Okay. So that's one possibility. So the Gemara, that Mishnah, however, only said if somebody writes a kid out, right? It totally just cuts them off. What about cutting it down a little bit? Is that okay? So Rashbam, actually on Daf, says, yeah, that you can do, it's just as long as you're not cutting them out completely. So many Rishonim disagree, and Rav Moshe concludes that it's not okay. Maybe there is some permissibility to readjust for the purpose of a mitzvah. And there is that idea out there that a person should leave some of their assets over to tzedakah of some sort. If a person belonged to a shul or to a school their entire life, you know, or connected to a school their entire life, that's sort of like an institution that was associated with them. So that is considered appropriate, praiseworthy, and included. The assumption, generally, they say up to 10%. That is the amount that is considered to be appropriate. Okay. So what other possibilities are out there to sort of avoid this issue? Now, I'll get to at the end. First we could just say, well, I want in. I'm just going to do everything according to halacha. So that's not considered such a good idea. We'll save that for the end. But the assumption, like from the point of the Gemara onwards, people are trying to figure out how to get around these halachas. And there are several areas of halacha where, like, it's not unusual that we sort of there is a halacha, and the learning about it is figuring out how to get around it, right? So one classic example of that is the laws of ribis, the laws of interest. So the laws of interest have two components, figuring out what is a prohibition of interest, and B, how to get around the problems of ribis so that normal life can, normal business actions can take place. So the way I often think about it is, in laws of ribis, it's easier to understand that we sort of make a nod to the concept of ribis. We say, yeah, that's to the concept of a prohibition, that everything really, I should just give you whatever you need, and I should be able to trust that you get it back, and there shouldn't be any interest payments, etc. We sort of nod to that idea, but acknowledge the fact that reality is not going to work that way, right? That might be if you need $20 in order to take a cab someplace, but if you need several million dollars to build a building in Center City, right, it doesn't quite make sense to say, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll give that to you as an interest free loan. No, that's how business works, and that's appropriate that business work that way. We just sort of nod to the idea of brotherhood and then figure out, okay, how are we actually going to make this happen? So what are some of the ways that one can get around? Well, one idea could be to not make it subject to inheritance at all, right? Inheritance means that we're giving the money, we're going to dispense with the money after the death of the individual, right? So maybe we could say, well, instead of giving all the money out after the person dies, we could give all the money out before the person dies, right? The person has the right to write gifts to whoever he deems, and that's okay. The problem with that is that it's somewhat impractical, right? That, yes, a person is getting significantly older, it is maybe appropriate and perhaps good tax advice to start gifting money away so that a person doesn't have to be too nervous. But as somebody who is a young age or middle age, right, that's not very practical to do, to just say, oh, yeah, we're going to write, I'll just give all my assets away to my kids, and that way we won't have to worry about the laws of inheritance, right? It doesn't work. And also it doesn't work, what happens to the stuff that you gain afterwards? Or are you going to keep anything to help you out, or all that? So that is, in theory, a decent way to get around it, but practically, it's certainly not. It might even resolve a significant amount of cases because you couldn't do it, and I'll get rid of all my assets, my kids will pay the bill for the nursing home or something, or for the nurse or whatever it is that's going on. So that is doable in some cases, but certainly not all cases. Another possibility is the idea of making a kinyan. I mean, we could say, I'm going to, all of my stuff is yours. From this, we're going to make a kinyan, like do a kinyan suder, like with a handkerchief, and say, I'm hereby giving to you all of my things, subject to a minute before I pass away. Right? So that could also potentially work. There's another practical aspect of that, though, and that is it only works up to the point that you make the kinyan, right? But as soon as that's happened, so anything that I acquire after that is not going to be included in that. That would be considered a davar shelo bali olam, something that has not come into existence and therefore not subject to laws of acquisition. One more thought that people have is, as well, what about dina de malchus adina? I mean, there are laws about dividing some of these inheritance up. Why don't we just say, well, the laws of the land don't work with the Torah, but the law of the land is the law of the land, and therefore we should stick with the law of the land. So this is not time for a dissertation on the dina de malchus adina, what exactly that means and when it applies and when it doesn't apply, and that is a very interesting concept, but suffice it to say, it doesn't apply in this case. There is much discussion as to when it does apply, but most assume that it would only apply when there's an interest for the government for it to happen in that particular way. The government itself is benefiting. The government has an interest in people living peacefully in that, but the government, for this purpose, the government has to be personally have a stake, and that does not exist in that case. And beyond that, the malchus adina doesn't work when it is keneged halacha. Right? You can't say, well, the government has mandated a 7-day work week, so therefore what can we do? We're going to work all 7 days. Right? That doesn't work. That is in contradiction to the Torah. Okay? So we have knocked off four possibilities, and while some may have some usage, practically, it's not going to work for the majority of cases. Certainly, when people at young ages, when they have children, write these wills for many years in the future down the line, that way we have something in order to take care of something if the need arises, right? So it's not going to apply in those cases. So what is the Eitza that Chazal has established? So that Eitza is interesting. It's not found. The Gemara doesn't get into it. It really is most prominent in a Ramah. The Ramah is quoted from earlier sources. This is the, 1500 or so? The Ramah, this is the book that fell, so I'm in the wrong spot here. The Ramah appears in Simon Reish Pei Aleph Sif Zion. There's lengthy commentaries on it, but he says as follows. He says, Akose, somebody writes that their daughter should take after their death half the portion of a male. Now, this is going to be called a shtar. This is actually known in the halachic parlance, and truth is also in the lawyer parlance, as a shtar chasi zachar. Because that was the minhag during the time of the Ramah. He was trying to figure out this problem, right? It's not right. The girls don't get anything. The girls should get something, right? So the minhag of Krakow, circa 16th century Krakow, is that the girls would get half the portion of guys. So therefore, forevermore, this shtar is known as a shtar chatzi zachar, a shtar getting to get the girls half of what the guys get. Right, but that doesn't necessarily line up with what one's will is going to be. Most people just make up the will, and all their children will get equally. But the same principle will apply. So dina ki yirusha bi'amu v'alcho v'ksuva kodman l'matan azu v'chein asher nifse habas v'chol yimei chaya hanosin yachol limkor nachasim afa pishakazalo me'ayom l'achar misa v'ein abas notelas elan bin nachasim shayelo b'shas nesina aval lo achar kach v'ein adam yachol l'haklos davar shalo b'liolam miyu nirali mashanoagim akshav l'ikshtov char. Right, that was just we could make a kinyan in order to give everything over from now. He says, but it's only going to work from the time of the kinyan, not what takes place afterwards. He says, but what should we do? Akshav lichtov shtar chov lebito ulahasnos im yitain lebito chela chatzi zachar yifter minachov. What's going on? This is quite a trick. Is the father will say, I want, let's say his assets are $100,000. And he's got two boys, two girls. I want $110,000 to go to my daughter. I am indebted to her to that amount. And you, my bechor, are responsible to oversee that. Right? So therefore, all of my assets, dad is saying, are going to go to Sprinza. Right? Or Yaakov Moshe. you could do the following. You could divide up my land in the following way. And then you spell out the will. That's the mechanism that's going on. And why does that? And my debt to Sprinza is chal, right? Exists a minute before I pass away, right? So that then you've set up an actual amount, right? Now the person has to be a reasonable amount, but not beyond what a person's assets will be at the time of the death. Or at least beyond what the person would get on his own, and you've set up that he has the responsibility to divide things up in this way in order to avoid the debt. So therefore, it's about something going on before the death as opposed to after the death, and that's the mechanism. And that's what works. So therefore, whoever's the executor of the loan carries out those instructions, and therefore gets absolved of the debt. And that is known as the Shtar Chatzi Sachar. That's just the Ruts. It's been around for several hundred years. If you go to, certainly the Orthodox lawyers in the area have these, you can go to plenty of websites, I printed this out from the Beis Din of America, what a halachic will is the way it's written in English. I, the undersigned, hereby obligate myself to one of the children, right, blank, the sum of blank, effective immediately but not payable until 1 minute before my death, on the condition that I do not retract this obligation any time prior to my death. All the property which is mine at that time, both real and personal, should serve as security for that payment, right? So you've set up the debt. And then I hereby stipulate that my heirs, as defined by Torah, shall be given the option of paying the above obligation, or in lieu of that, carrying out the terms of the last will and testament, which follows this page, right? So when a person sets up their will, so you pretty much print out one of these, and you put it down as a rider, and that covers you according to halacha. So if you go to, what's the name, the one who gave shir an hour ago, what? Yeah, so if you go to him, right, he certainly has these, I worked it out with him for members of my shul. He called me, he says, well, which form do you want me to use? I sent him the form, et cetera, and he did it. Dalia Okin, also a lawyer in the area who does this kind of stuff. She called and left this, like, message on my machine. Hi, Rabbi Gross, I was wondering if we could sit down and meet and talk about the laws of inheritance, et cetera. I was like, so I called her back, left a message. I said, look, I'm a little busy right now, but if you're interested, like, if you want to know, I recommend the RCA, Shtar Chatzi Zachar, and just use that with any congregants. If that's what your question was, she wrote back, that's what I needed to know. Thank you. and that was the end. You create a debt to one of your kids, or it's probably usually one of your kids, that's the best way of working out. It's the first paragraph here. I hereby obligate myself to Sprinza, the sum of $10 million, payable a minute upon my, starting now, but payable a minute before I die. No, that's a debt, that's the point. And everything, you have to avoid... No, it's my debt. I as the person, I owe this person $1 million. Why not? I do. I owe them. I'm establishing that debt on my own. I'm declaring it now. But if you my loyal executor of the will, if you want to avoid paying that debt, right, divide my assets the following. Therefore, it's a legal loophole. Yeah. And 100% is a legal loophole. Yes, it's contract. It's signed.
So
notarized.
To whom does the debt need to be
paid? Well, to the person who I assign. But if you want to avoid paying the debt, divide my assets the following way. Right? Therefore, it's debted money that's being divided up, not death money that's being divided up. Right, there is a minhag of taking up at least a portion and saying that this is not subject to the debt and should be divided up according to halacha. Right, therefore you fulfill the mitzvah. Some have that practice. Personally, I'm not sure it's so easy to pull off. I read today someplace that maybe they recommend dividing up the svarim that way. The father had svarim. The father says, my svarim will be divided up only amongst the boys, and the bechor gets pishnayim, gets double. Okay, if one wants to do that, that certainly fits in. In terms of putting it in a will, I'm not sure it's so easy to do. One more just thought on this, and that is in the Gesher Achayim. Gesher Achayim was Tukhachinsky. This is like the Avelis book before there were Avelis books. This is he was written in Yerushalayim about 100 years ago or so, and he writes that this is certainly the minhag to do, to give out, to write these Shtar Chatzi Zachers and to give it out in that appropriate way. And he says, and I'll tell you a story. There is once a wealthy person who was a wealthy guy in Yerushalayim, and he decided, I'm going to divide up my property according to halacha, and that's going to be the whole discussion. He says, v'hinchil, v'hanchil sinna v'tachrud upeirud b'mishpachto adasher amur habriyos shelo kedai hayelo lahashir rechushal harish sinna. He bequeathed so much hatred and breaking apart within his family that everybody said that it wasn't worth him for him to give over his to hold back his wealth and to give over the hatred. And even the Rabbanim all made fun of him and said that it was inappropriate, and this is actually an application of the concept of minhag mevatel halacha. There's this rule the Gemara says, right, minhag mevatel halacha. It's not true. What do you mean? Halacha was carried today. He says, no. If there's a minhag that fits within halacha, right, that will override halacha. So that will override the what seems to be the standard halacha, and this would be an appropriate application of minhag mevatel halacha to do wills in this way, and hopefully that will avoid strife that often comes about during this process, and shalom will reign not just when the father or the parent is alive, but even after they pass away as well. Okay, let's stop here.